I would be your dolphin friend.
Would you?
You'd be in my alliance?
Yeah, yeah. I would be a lion. I find you in every species.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we ask the question, does intuition only exist in humans?
Fascinating.
Hi, Bean!
Hi. That's the enthusiasm I love.
Oh my God, you were upset that I wasn't giving it to you when we were doing our tech setup.
We were doing our tech setup, and I do like to be honest that we did take a couple weeks off of recording. So it is really nice, even though we're releasing, we took a few weeks break, so it's really nice to see your face. But when you first came on, I didn't feel like you felt like it was really nice to see my face.
Here we go. Didn't you miss us, guys? And Bean asking me if I love her? Bean, what's happening? How has life been? I'm sure you have a million cringes and delights since it's been a couple weeks since we've recorded.
I actually don't. I only have like a few.
I have the cringiest.
You do?
Cringiest cringe.
Oh, yes. Why don't you take it off? Take it off.
Oh my God.
Take it off.
I'm like embarrassed of myself.
Those are the best.
You know this story.
Mine are all really nice. I'm not going to lie. The only stuff I wrote down was nice.
Please don't give us like, it's summer and we're hanging out with friends and the weather's nice.
But you know what? Why can't entertain that be us a delight? Little. Okay, fine. I will. But
my delight that is that our political system became a telenovela over the summertime. And it's been such a fun soap opera that we've been watching.
I don't like it.
You don't like it.
That's your cringe?
I can't stop watching. No, I can't. I watch so much news now. It's an addiction.
That's really funny because I have actually gone the other direction due to Los Teles Novelas. I physically, I feel like overloaded and overwhelmed. I can't.
We probably can't even mention what the latest is because it'll be outdated by the time this episode comes out. But I'm sure more has gone on since we're recording and it's all going to be okay. Everyone buckle up. No.
Does your intuition feel like it's going to be okay? Because my intuition does not feel that way.
My knowing tells me that things are going to change really, really radically. And that something shifted. Like when Trump almost got assassinated and then Biden dropped out and Kamala became the nominee, I literally felt this like, the best way to describe it was like vertigo in my system.
That
and
bad.
The message I got really clearly is like the timeline has shifted. Something's shifted. Like we've shifted over. And what I felt from that is there is no like predestined outcome. It's what we create. Like it is wide open.
I don't like what we're creating. No, thank you.
But are you excited about the nominee?
No. I'm not excited about anything that's happening right now. I'm not going to lie.
You're not excited.
I feel
excited
overwhelmed.
About Kamala.
I don't know if she has what it takes to beat Trump.
I think she has what it takes. I don't know if this country is to be not misogynistic or racist.
Correct.
Unfortunately.
Correct.
I think she has what it takes for sure. I'm not
Possibly.
Sure this country has what it takes.
Correct. So I don't think as a candidate, it's the best option because of those reasons.
I will tell you that the level of excitement and enthusiasm and money and volunteers and like my children, Gen Z,
yeah,
all of a sudden are so excited about the election.
Oh, really?
Because they've done such a good job. Oh, yeah. Charlie XCX endorsed her and Megan Thee Stallion and Quavo. Like they're doing a really good job getting young people excited. Right. So I think that like that for me, all of a sudden when they were super excited at dinner one night, like Kamala's going to win. I was like, oh, wow. Like you're interested. Yeah. I just thought it was a good sign that young people are interested right now.
I did just read an article about how this is different from 2016 in that like some insanely high number of boomers have passed away since the 2016 election.
Wow.
So it wipes out all of those votes that could have been in a direction that may not align with you and me. And a bunch of the Gen Zers have come of a voting age now.
Yes, exactly.
So there's all and they like different people coming to the polls now.
And they weren't going to vote when it was Biden versus Trump. So now there's a whole new energy infused. This is my point. When you ask me what I feel intuitively, yes, if we do not have hope and excitement, we're not going to win. But if we can hold on to this hope and excitement, there is a chance that that manifests into something real. That's what I felt. Right.
I'll do my best.
Is that your But that's cringe? Not my cringe or my delight.
Oh.
No. My cringe is that, you know, I went on this epic family vacation that we do every year to the Outer Banks. Well, every other year. We had such a good time because it's been, one, a couple years since we've done it. Two, the first time we've done it since I moved across the country from my family. We are tight. Like, we do Tigers. All the things together. So we rented this house on the Outer Banks, which is the shores of North Carolina. And there was 20 of us. And we had the best time. We played games together. We sang karaoke together. Like, it was so awesome. I really loved it. However,
I love that. Oh, no.
However, on the first day that it was beach day, my uncle goes out early. He goes out like 8 a.m. every morning to like set up the stuff.
I love that.
And he's sitting there and he texts the family chat and is like, hey, everyone's out of the water. Shark warning.
Oh,
now,
no.
You dear dedicated listeners know that there is nothing worse that you could say to me than shark warning. Truly.
I thought you were going to get those bracelets that emit a high-pitched sound or something.
Even if I had the bracelets, which I did not get.
Right. Good work.
Could you imagine seeing a shark in the water with your meat? Even if you're not me.
Yeah. Like, okay. I have no fear of sharks, but like, I wouldn't want to see one right close to me in the water.
Correct. So I'm going to tell this story very quickly because I could go – this could take up the whole episode.
I hope you're okay.
Anyway. All right. So we get everything together. We're all going down to the beach. And in my head, when he texts that, I get dizzy. I get really dizzy. And I'm like, that's weird. I'm having like a very like physiological reaction more than I would think. But you know what? He's messing with me. They know that I'm scared. I'm just going to go. I also had 4 children with me. I mean, teenagers. But like that, I think, is what was really making me anxious is I can decide I'm not going in the water. I can't make these 4 kids never go in the water this whole week.
Right.
So we go down there. As we're like approaching the shore, sure enough, I sent you a picture. There is a fin that is very, very pointed.
Triangular.
It's not with a bunch of other fins like dolphins are. And it's like kind of swimming around. It looks like it's fishing. But I mean 20 feet in front of us. Not way out. Not binoculars needed. Right there. Right there, there is a pointed fin going back and forth in front of us. And I, when I tell you, got so dizzy that I got severely nauseous and started weeping, like openly crying in front of the children. Had zero control. It was so ridiculous.
It's a real fear.
The kids are then now not even looking at the shark. They're kind of looking at me like, oh my God, is she going to have a panic attack? Anyway, we're watching this thing go back and forth. I'm crying. My brother comes over. He's like holding me. I'm like, they can't go in the water. They can't go in the water. He's like, no one's going in the water. Everyone relax. This guy comes over, lifeguard. He's like, can you believe it? We're like, I can barely hear him because I'm not conscious. And he's like, I mean, that's one of the biggest manta rays we've seen out here.
All after it was a manta ray. I didn't know manta rays have shark fins.
So they don't. You know what it was? It was one of its wings.
Just sticking up?
It's swimming. So it's like going, think about it going sideways and one of its wings sticking out. Then going the other way, one of its wings sticking out. Now, I don't want the kids in the water with a manta ray either, but I wouldn't have had that kind of completely irrational reaction because I don't have a phobia of manta rays. But
manta rays dangerous?
It was massive.
Up right now. I need to get
a real
visual.
How Steve Irwin died, Bean.
I thought it
he
was
got
a sting
in the chest by him.
Is it right?
Not the same thing.
Is it the exact same thing? Anyway, we'll clarify later.
So that is why I am going to categorize that as cringe because I lost my shit. I was not able to be a rational, normal parent, and in the end, it was a manta ray, and the kids laughed at me all day long.
But you have a real fear. I feel sad hearing.
Truly,
sorry. Yeah, because I can feel it in you.
Like, always try to tell people that it is way bigger than just, I'm scared of sharks, which everyone is. It is, like, it is physical. And I even surprised
myself. What about
– I could not believe I got nauseous and, like,
what about some EMDR? Some good old EMDR?
I'm going to.
Yeah.
Yes. I've told my friend who does EMDR. She's like, we're on it. Yeah, yeah, totally. Great. It was bad.
Great.
So that's me. What do you got? Actually, you know, it actually ties into the topic of our episode today. So I'm glad I spoke about animals. What do you got?
What's Mine's very small. Like? Mine's very small, but very adorable. I was taking a shower. Yes, thank you. I was taking a shower either yesterday or 2 days ago. So as a lot of mothers probably know, you don't get a lot of alone, quiet time. Like I typically shower, and in my home, I'd say between one and four people. And also I leave open the dog, come in to greet me in the shower or ask me for something or tell me something or ask where something is located. I very rarely just like take a relaxing shower. But for some reason, almost every night I attempt to do it. And I'm always a little disappointed that nobody allows me the 10-minute space. I light a candle. I'm playing some music.
Yeah.
So I'm all relaxing. I think this was last night or two nights ago. And then the kids all came in because they were getting ready for bed. And then Rem said to me, I wrote it down because I just thought it was so cute to me. Remy is my littlest guy. He's six. And he said to me, unprompted, I wasn't even like complaining. He goes, do you need some alone time? And then I said, And then I said, no, you guys have to get ready for bed anyway. He goes, well, we could take our stuff out of the bathroom.
Oh,
and I said, God. No, but I immediately thought one. Right. What awareness and kindness does that little boy have? And two, I also wanted to applaud myself for a minute and say that I've obviously referred to needing alone time out loud in a healthy way that doesn't make my children feel bad about themselves or anything. Enough so that he recognized the value in it for me and what I always get out of having the 10-minute shower to myself. Yes.
Bean, I love him. I'm so proud of him. And you know what? I would have loved, or maybe next time, for you to say yes. So mommy can also be someone who needs alone time. And also, can you lock the door once in a while and just take your 10 minutes? Please?
Maybe.
Look at her. Maybe. She's freaking out. 10 minutes. They can do it. They can do it for 10 minutes without asking you a question.
I think I just need to more clearly communicate. Like, I'm showering for 10 minutes. Please leave me alone for 10 minutes so I can shower in peace. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't it enough.
I think they could handle that.
Yeah. Yeah. I leave clues, like the candle burning, the lights are off. Like I leave some clues around, but it's not, nobody's picking up what I'm putting down, I guess. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I think it's really good just to tell them. That's so sweet. I love him. He is such an old soul.
I know, Remy. But it was such emotional awareness. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
It was my delight for the week. Yeah. Totally.
Wait, well, so should we get into this episode that I am deeply excited about? I am so excited about this episode. I texted you yesterday.
You
was like, I cannot wait to do this episode. Okay, so I have wanted for a very long time to do an episode about intuition beyond humans. Like, I have this question in my mind. Does intuition exist in animals? Does it exist in plants? Does it exist in other parts of, you know, the world beyond just humans? And so Bean finally agreed to let me tell her whether the answer is yes or no. And I have so much information for you.
I even texted you and said, I'm a little worried we don't have enough to share on this episode for it to carry an entire episode. And you told me otherwise.
I said, it's going to be a long one. And I am not leaving anything out. It's so fascinating, I think. I agree. Let's see what you think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. Yes.
So why do this episode? Obviously, we talk about intuition nonstop. And I think that it's important to understand intuition, to explore other areas where it comes up so that we can continue to get fluent in the language of intuition, recognize it when it's happening, give it its like due recognition, and become more familiar with it. Because I want everyone to constantly be aware of their own intuitive knowing, but also the intuitive knowing that's surrounding them. And so this question of, well, does intuition exist outside of humans in nature is fascinating. The answer is yes, 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 yes.
What?
So much yes. I know. So let's just define intuition before we get into all of these examples. Just in general, I'm going to give you a generic definition, not my own. Intuition is just defined as the ability to understand something immediately without the need for conscious reasoning. It's just the knowing of something in that moment, right then and there, without any tangible connection to experience or reasoning. And we obviously are using it 24/7. It is the voice that's whispering to us that always knows best about what is right and wrong and what we need and what we don't need. We are highly intuitive beings. In fact, intuition is a part of most of your decision making. However, and if you listen to this podcast, you know, if you're in fear or anxiety, it's hard to hear it. So then the question becomes, well, what about species that don't have the kind of anxious thinking and other human emotions that we have? What's their relationship like to this just knowing, this knowing that exists?
Yeah, that's what absolutely. They have fear for sure. Now, is theirs clouded when they're scared?
That's a great question. I know that intuition, that fear, for example, in animals is instantaneous. They don't walk around carrying fear constantly. Like, think about a dog. A dog gets scared. It shakes its body. It's literally shaking that energy of fear off, and then it's moving on. It's forgotten.
Yeah. It's like, that I don't have time for this. Yeah.
Right.
All right. So let's start with animals then. We're going to do animals. We're going to go crazy on this ep.
Okay, let's do it. So first of all, intuition is anthropomorphic, which means like we cannot, sometimes we like to imbue animals with human personality traits, and emotions. Intuition is one of those things, right? So we are using a word that is applied to humans for animals. Let's just keep that in mind. So it might not perfectly describe it, but I have examples of animals where it's sort of undoubted that there is a level of knowing in the way that they function that goes beyond conscious reasoning. Now,
I already have an argument.
Okay.
Sorry. Wow. Who's to say it's intuition? Let me say what I'm going to say and then I'll argue you. Go.
Yeah. No. I was going to say some of the examples you're going to hear, because I did a lot of research and read a lot of scientists like talking about this. Some of the things that scientists talk about is intelligence, I think. But it is a combination of using intelligence and a sense of knowing something beyond just that conscious reasoning that makes some of these examples intuitive. So are you ready?
Okay, hit me with that. Hell yeah.
Okay. First set of animals is primates. So apes, chimpanzees, orangutans, they show signs of intuition mostly in social understanding, but also in the way that they have learned to use tools to make things happen. And so the examples I'm going to give you are not them being shown how to use the tool. The examples are the tool is there. The problem is there. There is a putting together of how do I make this occur to solve a problem. So there is a study in the early 20th century by Wolfgang Kohler, and they call these the Kohler apes, where it showed that chimpanzees could solve problems intuitively. So for example, they were observed without being shown how stacking boxes on top of each other to reach a banana or using sticks to retrieve objects that are out of reach. And so what Wolfgang Kohler says or said is that the thing that was interesting about this is that there's a form of insight that is immediately used rather than trial and error. They weren't like trying to figure it out and then they finally stacked the boxes. It was like, I know.
The one monkey was like, follow me. All I have is visuals right now. All these friends working together. It's great.
The intuitive life coach of the monkeys.
Yeah.
Was like, I know what to do.
I know what to do. And they were like, okay.
There's another theory that goes with primates' theory of mind, where some primates exhibit behaviors that suggest they can understand the intentions and perspectives of others. So, for example, chimpanzees have been shown to deceive others or hide their food to prevent it from being stolen, which is indicating to scientists this intuitive grasp of others' intentions and thoughts, this sensing of, I need to hide this from you because I can sense that you're going to come and take this from me. So that's an intuitive knowing. And then this one's going to come up over and over again, every animal I talk about, but empathy. Showing empathy and emotional intelligence is connected to intuition. I know you're going to die when I get to the dog part. I know. Primates often display empathetic behaviors like consoling others in distress. You know, if they see another primate or even sometimes humans that they bond with in distress, then they're seen going towards them, being near them, which is demonstrating an intuitive understanding of others' emotions.
I'm going to have to do like a cap cut of all the faces I'm making throughout this. There's so much sweetness. It's too much.
It's a lot of sweetness.
Explode. Yeah.
You're not going to like this other group, but I really think this is one of the most intuitive set of animals, which is cats.
I believe it.
She says with a disgusted look on her face.
I like all animals except cats. No, I like some cats. There are some.
You like my cats, right?
Yeah, your cats are all right. I like cats that act like dogs because I like dogs. I think cats like just really don't give a shit. That's the deal. Like they do come across like they don't.
Yeah. And I actually think it's because they're so good at reading energy. Like I think that they don't like it when you are desperate for their attention.
I'm not desperate.
They're too cool.
Right. That's what I'm saying. They come across almost like they are better than me. I'm like, cat, we're the same here. You and me, we're just doing our best.
Well, they are better because they're more intuitive. Here are some examples. Right. So one, cats are very much known for reading human emotion and sensing when their emotions are sad, happy, angry, and responding accordingly. So for example, they'll seek out a sad or stressed owner and sit with them. I will never forget, we had a cat named Malus the cat. I was younger. And my sister had just, her boyfriend, she and her boyfriend had just broken up. She was like 17. And she was laying on the bed and she was like quietly crying. There was like just tears coming down her face. Sorry. And Malus was playing with me and just like looks up, jumps up on the bed and goes and sits on her chest and just like licks the tears off her face and just sat with her.
And the chest is a place where you can, can't you push when you're like,
yes, exactly. Somatically. Exactly. Yeah. So I, like when I read that, I was like, that's true. I've seen that happen where the cat immediately senses this emotion. They also can read body language and adjust their behavior. So they will avoid people who seem tense or angry because they can intuitively sense. Maybe that's what it is.
I'm like, you have too much cat anger. And they're like, human.
Exactly. So that they will seek affection from people who energetically feel open to them and avoid people who seem tense or angry. This one is mind-blowing. When I learned this, I learned this before this research, but it blew my mind. Their vocalizations, like meowing, are a vocalization they've developed to get human attention. It was developed for humans.
Like, I've heard wild cats meow.
Have you? Meow? Like a house cat?
No, like there's feral cats and they're like, meow.
But that's in their species. Feral cats are still coming from a domesticated species. They're not wild.
That's correct.
Yeah. You don't hear animals in the wild meowing.
You don't?
No, because these vocalizations like meowing, hissing is a little bit more wild, but even they use different levels of their purring to communicate with humans specifically. So that means they intuitively modified their vocalization based on the response they got from their owners. And that species developed meowing over time out of an intuitive. Yeah.
Can I argue yet? Are you ready
for me? You can argue whatever you want, please.
Okay. But isn't this also, can't this be attributed to, in some ways, survival of the fittest? Like
totally.
Not intuition. Like these cats meowed, people paid more attention to them. They got better fed. Then they had more babies who also meowed. You know what I mean?
But how did they know to meow to begin with? And why does survival of the fittest not include an intuitive sense?
I like that.
Yeah. I agree it's survival of the fittest, but I think these species are using a form of intuition and instinct. Intelligence.
What is instinct versus intuition?
In my book, instinct is a reaction based on past stimuli, based on past experience.
It's a
biological, physiological reaction in your system as a species based on passed down stimuli. So the rat experiment where they get prodded and every time then 3 generations down, the rats even see the prod, they react. That's an instinct to that visual, because generationally that gene has passed down that that thing is dangerous. That's instinctual. Intuition is a present knowing that is not connected to past or experience. It's just a knowing that drops in.
I feel bad for those rats. This is the many faces of Melissa during the animals episode.
I know. I knew this was going to be emotional roller coaster.
It really is.
Okay. So, and then finally, the other thing that's really wow about cats with intuition is their navigational skills. Have you heard these stories about like cats who get lost and then like will traverse the country and find their way back?
No. How do they do it?
So they're known to find their way home over long distances, which shows this intuitive navigational ability. It is also based on their very acute sense of smell, hearing, memory, but it's again a blended concept of, yes, they're using that, but there's this intuitive navigational knowing that they're using too. There was this story I found in the 50s about a cat named Sugar.
Oh, who, Sugar.
She was a Siamese cat, traveled 1,500 miles from Anderson, California to Gage, Oklahoma to return to her owners.
How she did had she been get given, there in the first place?
She was given to a new family in California, but she was like, no, I want my original owners. So she went from California to Oklahoma and found her way back to her owners.
What a badass bitch. Wow. Right? Impressive, Sugar.
I know. Okay, I have so many more animals. Dolphins.
Oh, I totally could get down with that. Yeah.
Dolphins was the one when I was doing the research, I thought, did you say I could totally get down with that?
Like dolphins being intuitive. It makes total sense. They're very intelligent.
What? Oh. So you feel like that when they're intelligent, you can give them, ascribe them the trait of intuitive.
I see how that sounds. Like, why can't you be intuitive and not intelligent? Like, why should they go hand in hand? I guess maybe with greater intelligence comes greater awareness, comes greater intuitiveness.
I actually think that we see intuitive knowing as intelligence sometimes.
And it's incorrect, you're saying?
I'm not saying it's incorrect. I'm just saying we don't label it correctly. Like, I think sometimes when someone knows something, we're like, wow, they're so smart. Rather than like, oh, they're so intuitive. Like they just knew that.
Dolphin is not smart. It's actually just highly intuitive.
They are highly intelligent too, but yes.
Idiots. intuitive morons. Sorry, dolphins. So, a
couple of reasons why dolphins fit in this category. One, they are one of the animals that live in really complex social structures. So they live in these intricate social groups with strong bonds and hierarchies. And their interactions involve things like cooperation, role differentiation, like a hierarchy between, you know, this one is the leader, this one is the follower, and even alliances in dolphin pods.
I would be your dolphin friend.
Would you?
Would you find me in my alliance? Land? Yeah, yeah. I would always be aligned. I find you in every species.
So what that suggests to researchers is just an intuitive understanding of social dynamics and developing these social dynamics over time.
Freaking adorable.
Empathy is another big one with dolphins, showing that they support injured pod members, but also supporting humans in distress. Lots of stories about people who are stranded and dolphins surrounding them to keep sharks away.
For reals?
For real.
I love that. What a dream.
So it's really implying this intuitive grasp of the emotional state and needs of others. Empathy is an intuitive knowing.
Yeah.
For sure. So anytime you hear empathy in these animals, that's what it is. Echolocation was something that came up as having to do with intuition in dolphins, in that, you know, they use echolocation to navigate and hunt in like murky waters.
Yeah.
But it involves emitting a sound wave and then interpreting the returning echoes, which researchers are saying, like, in the species evolving over time, that required this intuitive process of like sophisticated, not only cognitive abilities, but like interpretation of what it means. Echo they're getting back.
Yeah. I mean, that applies to a lot of animals, right? Like a lot of animals have their own styles of communication that have developed over the years. I quickly am noticing our Prince ducks are aligned.
They are. Oh, look at that. They're next to each other.
They're right next to each
other. Hold it in our hand. Wait, mine looks so much brighter than yours.
Yours really does. Wow. You're in the bright light. I'm in the dark dimness of the East Coast.
Oh, finally, my light is bright. For those of you that are just tuning in, Bean and I have matching rubber duckies that are dressed as Prince behind us.
Because we love
check
Prince.
Check us out on YouTube. Okay.
All right. Good plug.
All right. A few more animals, but I have other things. I have other species.
Oh, sorry. Keep going. I'm ready for dogs. I'm not going to lie. You know, it's okay, my favorite faves.
It's next after this one.
Yes.
Elephants.
Oh, my second. Oh, elephants might be my favorite. Elephants, monkeys, are dogs. They? Elephants might be elephants? My faves. I love that.
Why
they
do you
are
love them?
Because they're a matriarchal society, which I think is just mm-hmm. badass. I think they are the freaking cutest animals alive. I think they're like these gentle giants. I love the way that they take care of each other and they move together in communities. I just think they're amazing.
They are amazing and they are intuitive. They show empathy and social intelligence. They also actually, I didn't know if I thought this was intuition, but this was brought up a lot. They recognize themselves in mirrors. There's been like research studies where they show signs of self-awareness. Because like, they can recognize themselves.
They're that's like, girl, you good. I also saw a really cute video recently where this guy who was working at like an elephant sanctuary had to go away for like a year or something to deal with some family stuff and came back. And all the elephants came through the water with their trunks like, because they were so excited to see him come back to them. It was
that's
so
really
beautiful.
Sweet. Have you seen that with that lion guy on Instagram?
Where he jumps on them and hugs them.
Yes, and they're huge.
They're
oh
such
my god,
loves. Yeah,
it's crazy. Anyway, so I think the thing I'll just say about them, I'm not going to keep saying empathy. Empathy comes up for all of these. Is artistic abilities. Elephants some elephants have been trained to paint, which demonstrates an ability to engage in like creative and abstract activities, which hints at an intuitive understanding of patterns and aesthetics. Like, why would they know that? How do they know that?
Because they're adorbs.
Adorbs and intuitive. And then this is another communication one, which again, I would be very comfortable if you argued that the communication ones are not intuitive, but interesting nonetheless. Elephants can detect and interpret seismic signals through their feet, which allows them to communicate and sense distant events intuitively.
Through their feet.
So
cute.
Bean can't handle this.
It's so cute.
All right, dogs. Are you ready?
Oh my, am I ever. Let's just let it known. I have a dog. You have a dog. I am all dogs all day. I can't.
All dogs
all day. I never see a dog on the street that I don't talk to. My kids are the same way. Like I am dog. I'm a dog fanatic.
My sister at the beach, we'd just like lose her because we'd be taking a walk and a dog would walk by and she'd be like, I'm sorry, I have to go pet this dog.
Yep, me too.
Yeah,
me and
that's
all
you.
Three of my kids. Yeah.
That's you. So their intuitiveness really has to do with how attuned they are to human emotions, which is why we have such deep, entangled relationships with this species. Because when they say man's best friend, really this is the species that is the most connected to our emotion and responding to our emotion in a way that brings comfort or ease. One way they do that is through eye contact. So eye contact plays a really big role in the relationship between humans and dogs. And they're known to make eye contact with owners to seek guidance or express affection, which really is demonstrating an intuitive understanding of human social cues. Like totally. Just by reading your eye contact, intuitively they understand, oh, this means, okay, she's ready to play with me versus she's sad. I'm going to go sit with her. Yeah. And then just again, empathy. So really reading the emotions of their owners and often cuddling or staying close to owners when there is anxiety or sadness, which is intuitive empathy right there. There's no argument.
When any of my kids are sick, I mean, my dog is so attentive emotionally, but when any of my kids are sick, she will always, and she tends to follow me around the most, she will go and sit with whichever child is sick and just stay with them for the day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's, and like, what is that besides intuition?
Yeah. I mean, I believe, again, this is part of my argument. I believe in energy and I believe that animals can sense much greater energy than we are able to sense.
Yeah. So which I is think, intuition.
Is that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it's just knowing, not a sensing of like someone else's energy. It's not just like, it doesn't just arrive in my soul. Like you're getting a cue from that energy over there. Like the cue is the cue is, I don't feel well. This energy of unwellness. And the dog is like, oh, that human must be unwell. I'm going over. The dog did.
How do you
like,
detect that though?
I don't.
It's not based on intelligence. It's not based on past experience. How do you detect the sadness from the human?
I think it's an energy that they are able to interpret that we cannot as humans interpret all the time. Or we don't or we don't feel. We do to an extent. Like I can be around you and know if you're sad or mad just by sitting near you. It's not my intuition though. It's like me understanding you enough and picking up on the energy in the room. It's not just a knowing I have. I'm things are factoring into my decision to say.
Oh, I see. You're putting intuition in this category of like it just drops in for no reason.
Sort of, or like it's just a knowing and you have no reasoning for it. Whereas there is sort of a reasoning for the other ones, I think.
Got it. So in my definition of intuition, sensing other people's emotions is intuitive because there is no past experience. Well, I mean, there's past experience that can tell you about a person. But if someone is sad that you don't know very well and you can feel their sadness, that's an intuitive ability because it is a knowing about something that is unseen in that moment. It's just a deep knowing.
Yes.
So I put that in the intuition category. You can call it sensing. Okay. All right. Birds. I have two more animals.
Ooh,
birds.
That was it? We're off of dogs. Can we talk about how they make service? Oh, sure. They're great service. I mean,
well, because of their empathetic response to anxiety, they make excellent service animals.
I feel like you spoke more heartwarmingly about the other animals and you just kind of glossed right over the dogs. And of their amazing abilities and their unconditional love. And I guess we're not just talking about why we love dogs.
Right.
Right.
But you can. I can give you a minute.
We should just do a whole episode on dogs and how they'll do anything for you. And all they want is to be loved and some good food.
Great. Sounds good. Guys, let us know if you want an episode of Bean talking about how much she loves
dogs.
Or
if anyone feels like they want to talk to me about dogs, you can also reach us on the Signal with Maury and Melissa podcast. I mean, Signal with Maury and Melissa on Instagram. You could just DM me and we'll go back and forth about our love of dogs.
Please do that. Please. So she has someone to talk to.
Because Maury doesn't care. All right. Anyway.
I mean, I love them. Birds. Sorry. Bird. All right. So birds, I feel like there's one behavior in birds that I often connect to intuitive knowing, which is migration. And their murmurations. Have you ever like watched a murmuration of birds? Do you know what that is? You know what that is.
No, I don't. But also, you know what I didn't know on this week's that came out this week, which is a while back when this comes out. I didn't know about it was our ancient spiritualism episode, the whirling dervishes.
Dervishes.
My parents listened to the episode and said, you don't know what that is. And they were mortified. Uh-oh. Are they going to also be mortified that I don't know what murmur?
Probably.
All right.
You know what it is. You probably just didn't know what the word is. It's when you look up at the sky and you see like a black cloud and you realize they're birds and they start to make shapes and patterns in their flight patterns. And it's like mesmerizing to watch. And I always watch and I'm like, how do they know what to do? Like, how are all of them correct? Okay. So that is an example actually that came up of patterns, migration patterns. They also said this is with whales and butterflies, but this like, and this is going into instinctual too, an instinctual intuitive migration pattern that they follow that is this unspoken connection between them that makes them do these beautiful murmurations and also migration. And also in migration, it allows animals to travel thousands of miles to specific breeding or feeding grounds guided by an innate sense of direction, and then sometimes also influenced by the Earth's magnetic field.
See,
but
there it is.
There it is. That is I am going to be an advocate for it. Doesn't have to be one or the other.
It doesn't. And I have to say, sometimes because I am new on my spiritual journey and what I believe and what I don't believe, I feel like I'm newer to it. And that when I'm away from you longer, I think I harden up a little bit back into my older, like less open-minded self. Because that's what I was for so long that and you and I took a bit of a break from recording and being like this, and having these kinds of conversations. And I feel like I closed off a little bit.
It doesn't have to be closed off. And also we can, like, you don't have to, people don't have to agree with each other all the time.
I don't know what I think. Let's just, yeah. How about we leave it at that? Who, you know what I have always wondered? How do the geese, when they're flying in a V, do they decide who goes up front?
Exactly.
I would follow
leadership.
You. I put you
intuitive up front. Leadership.
Is that what it is? That's what I'm wondering.
That would be, again, like, this is about, like, how are these animals sensing and knowing these things?
Biology.
Okay.
Okay. I would probably be that one in the back being like, I'll just go where they're going.
Just going to follow
you.
You'd
be up front. You'd be like, let's go. Bean, focus. I'd be like, dogs.
Okay. Last animal, octopus.
Oh, the genius of the genius. The most intuitive, I guess.
No, this one I also really put with intelligence.
Yeah.
Obviously, octopuses have been, I mean, maybe this isn't obvious, observed unscrewing lids from jars to access food. I don't know if anyone's ever seen that, but it's wild. It really demonstrates this intuitive understanding of the mechanism of a jar that they wouldn't have interacted with before. So again, it's this knowing that occurs in escaping enclosures, this ability to escape from enclosures by squeezing through small openings, which some researchers say is an intuitive understanding of their physical environment and their own body's capabilities. And some octopuses have actually, there's numerous stories of octopuses escaping from their tanks in aquariums and navigating complex routes to return to the ocean or reach other tanks, which demonstrates like spatial awareness, yes, but also this like intuitive problem solving that exists within them.
They really are. Have you seen My Octopus Teacher?
No, I haven't seen it.
It is a so good. Must. Yes, it's such a great, it's such a great documentary, and they are just genius creatures.
I will watch it. Okay, that's the end of the animal portion. I just want to ask you, which of the examples I gave you felt the most intuitive?
I don't know why, but elephants. I couldn't tell you.
Oh, interesting.
Why. I think, and I've always been so drawn to elephants. I don't know what it is about them. I just think they're
elephants
so
elephants is amazing. The one where you were able to be like, this is intuition, not just intelligence or biology.
I don't know why. Yes. That's how I feel about them. They feel like these like, I don't
godlike
know.
Godlike creatures.
Almost these godlike creatures. Yeah. Yes.
Well, my favorite god in Hinduism, Ganesha, is an elephant.
Well, there you go. Well, what about you? What about your... What was the most
all of them? Thing? I was like geeking out over all of this stuff because I, again, like felt like there's so much of this that we need to understand better.
Yeah.
We don't know. Great. And don't how know. Beautiful that there's this just sense of knowing that these animals have about so many different things that to me is their intuitive knowing mixed with their biology and their intelligence, which I think is what survival of the fittest is. It's a combination of all of those things.
Totally. Yeah. Wait, so you don't have one animal where you were like, whoa, especially during your research, you didn't have one where you were like.
Cats. Truly, I think that they're really, really magical creatures that are
how come we don't aware have a bunch of things. Service cats. How come we only have service dogs? We know why we don't have service elephants.
Dogs are a little bit more in need of validation. So they exist to make their owners happy, whereas cats just don't need that as much. Sorry. Yeah, but
they could serve a great purpose. Maybe they should get their acts together.
Okay, fine. You can be mad at them and they will sense it and they will attack you because they can sense aggression.
I don't want to talk badly about any animals. Let's move along to plants, shall we?
Don't.
I love to what? All love cats to plants.
Oh my God, I'm going to blow your mind with plants.
I'm assuming that's where we're going. I only have one thing to share about what I think about plants, but yes.
Please go ahead. You start.
Me first. It was just a tidbit that I've read about and I have started doing with my own plants is that they have found that they survive and thrive best when you talk kindly to them. That they've done studies where they talk kindly to one set of plants in the same conditions as and they tell another one like you're not growing good and like all these things. And they don't grow as well and the nice ones grow better.
Explain that.
It's adorable. Why explaining it's adorable. I talk to my plants now. I'm like, you are growing
me too.
So well. But I will say one of my plants I talk to a lot seems like he might be dying. He was like, stop talking to me. And I'm like, maybe he's great, buddy.
He's an introvert. He's like, this is too much attention.
And I'm like petting him. I'm like, you are great. You're in the great spot with the sun right now. I really appreciate how you've hung in there. And he's like, don't.
Oh, see. That's the cat of your plant family. It's like, you need too much of my validation, lady. I'm going to die.
Like, no. I'm like, God damn it. Anyway, yeah.
I once went into this brow waxing studio here in Santa Barbara, and the plants, it was like walking into a lush garden. They were like growing like vines. She had them set up so beautifully. And I asked her, I'm like, wow, your plants are amazing. She goes, I sing to them every day.
Totally believe it. Singing.
Right?
I have a bad voice, but maybe they'll enjoy it.
Maybe they will, or maybe they will die so that they don't have to deal with it.
They don't have to endure it.
This idea came from, I was listening to an interview on NPR. Now I'm not going to know her name, with this biologist that was being interviewed about whether plants are intuitive. Do you remember? It was like 6 or 7 months ago. I was like, oh my God, Bean, we got to get this woman on the podcast.
And then
we both ADHD'd and forgot.
Let's find her and get her on. I would love to explore this further.
Okay, so here are some things that come from her research. We will link to her book in the show notes and other research about plants. So plants obviously don't have a nervous system or brain, so they don't experience intuition the way like animals or humans do, but they exhibit these complex behaviors and responses to their environment that is analogous to an intuitive process.
Right.
So again, intuition is a human and like we can't anthropomorphize plants, but this is parallel to it.
Yeah.
The first one is phototropism, which is this ability that plants can have to sense light and grow towards it, which optimizes their ability to photosynthesize. The behavior is regulated by these hormones called auxins, but these auxins redistribute themselves within the plant to grow towards the light source.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. Isn't that biology?
Yes.
But that's fascinating.
Fascinating. Yeah. Also, why is biology and intuition have to be two separate things?
Oh, shit, girl. I feel like my faces are out of control. You have to tune in to the YouTube episode for this one. I am very animated.
You look like Count Dracula. Okay, the other one, gravitropism, which again is plants' ability to detect, but this time they're detecting gravity and orienting their growth accordingly. So the roots know to grow downward and the stems know to grow upward, which allows them to stabilize and then optimize their structure for light capture and absorption. So this intuitive understanding of gravity and which part of them should grow in which direction. Chemical signaling is something that comes up a lot, which is plants' ability to detect and respond to chemical signals from other plants, pests, and other beneficial organisms. So for example, if they're under attack by herbivores, some plants release this volatile organic compound that attracts predators of the herbivores to come to nearby plants to bolster their defense.
Wow. How do they know?
Biology. Exactly.
I don't know. Wow. That's really wild.
Yeah.
But I don't want them to kill the herbivores either.
But it's survival of the fittest.
Totally. I get it. Survival of life.
This one I'm not going to say right. Phygmotropism, which is the ability of plants to respond to touch or physical contact. Aww. So, for example, vines can sense and wrap themselves around a structure and grow upward.
Super fun.
Fascinating.
Good job, vines.
Good job, vines. Allelopathy, which is plants that release chemicals into the soil that inhibit the growth of nearby competing plants. Right?
That's wild.
Wild.
So wild.
And then this symbiotic relationships, because we're about to get into your favorite species here in a minute and mine. But this symbiotic relationship that plants can engage with things like fungi and bacteria. Mm-hmm. To allow for optimal nutritional
symbiosis.
Yeah. But again,
is our favorite species, are we talking about mushrooms?
We're about to talk about fantastic fungi. That's how we're going to end.
Geniuses.
The Intuits. Fact that plants are sensing things. What'd you say?
I was commenting on how they're brilliant mushrooms. And then I was saying how you were saying earlier, how is it made intelligence or is it intuition? And then I was just having a conversation by myself. Continue. Oh.
I can give you a minute as well for that.
No. Unless anyone wants to talk about dogs.
Or fungi.
Fungi. Also, I feel strongly about mushrooms as well. Yes.
Yes, so do I. Anyway, so again, I think that like when you look at plants as a species, there is a sensing and a knowing that exists in this species.
Yeah.
That is awe-inspiring.
It truly is. Truly. I agree. I'm and behind intuitive. I support that.
All right. So because it's our collective favorite species, we're going to end on fungi.
Okay.
There is a film called Fantastic Fungi. We highly recommend it. It's also beautiful. It's really beautiful, like to look at. But it is mind-blowing what fungi are and what they do and how they are here to assist all forms of life.
And I'm going to double down on you. And I firmly believe that TJ would absolutely love My Octopus Teacher. It is such great documentary on octopi. Octopus is.
We'll add that to the list. So fungi exhibit behaviors and responses that suggest a form of deep intelligence, but also this adaptive capability that can be likened, analogous. Yeah. To intuition. The first is their mycelial networks. So fungi grow as mycelial networks. These are vast interconnected webs of hyphae. These are thread-like structures under the ground. And these networks really efficiently allocate resources and nutrients. They optimize the growth of the fungi in patterns that respond well to the environmental conditions they're in. So, for example, the mycelium of a fungi will expand toward – tell me if this is not intuitive. The mycelium – so these are the thread-like structures of the fungi under the ground that absorb and move nutrients. The mycelium of a fungi will expand towards areas with abundant nutrients and retract from less favorable, weaker areas, which displays an intuitive understanding of resource distribution.
I think sometimes they're aliens and they are here watching us. They're way smarter than we are. They're way more intuitive than we are. And they're like, these sillies.
Well, I have had psilocybin experiences.
What?
I know you can't relate at all.
I'm glad you're sharing because I think we should do a whole episode on them.
I've talked about it before. Sure.
Oh, I didn't think you were saying it out loud. Great.
Okay. I've done them as a journey to help me heal anxiety, but also to expand my work and my consciousness. And absolutely, there is something to psilocybin that is cosmic, is 100%. Divine, is 100%. An opening to another realm.
It is.
That I have received information that I think is irrefutable, that I've then went and like done research and be like, oh my God, this is the same thing that's in this story from 1,000 years ago in this ancient mythology that I didn't know about. All of a sudden I saw it in this experience. It's wild. So
wild.
For that reason alone, I think they're intuitive. Sorry. Okay. There's a couple of other examples of fungi being intuitive. So pathfinding is another example. There's studies that have shown that mycelial networks can solve complex problems, such as finding the shortest path through a maze to a food source.
What?
Right? So there's this fungus, I'm not going to say it right, Ficerum polycephalum. It's a slime mold, which is not a total true fungus, but it's often studied for similar behavior. And it adapts its growth to navigate mazes efficiently, demonstrating a form of problem solving and spatial awareness. They put this slime mold in a maze and it figures out how to get to the end. Jaw-dropping moment.
Jaw-dropping. Is having. That's and I'm silent. Thinking we pull clips for our Instagram. Go check it out. Signal with Maury and Melissa on Instagram. And like every single, I feel like I just want to put the whole episode up because every single thing has been like, what? Or like, huh?
Yep. Okay. More symbiotic relationships in fungi that demonstrate intuitive. So there's a concept called mycorrhizal association, which is that lots of fungi form symbiotic relationship with plants. I just talked about this in the plant section, that form these mutualistic relationships where fungi intuitively provide plants with the essential nutrients they need, like phosphorus and nitrogen, because they then will receive carbohydrates produced by the plants through photosynthesis for their own survival. So they can sense the needs of their plant partners and adjust their nutrient exchange accordingly, which suggests an intuitive understanding of the mutual benefit.
I mean, call it what you will. I don't even care what you call it. Nature is mind-blowing, regardless.
Mind-blowing.
Intuition, biology, whatever. These facts that you're laying out are...
Wow. And this mycelial network I talked about actually is the communication network of trees and plants underground. They call this the Wood Wide Web, which they think is so funny, these little nerdy fungi researchers.
That is funny. They don't think
it. But it's this network underground that facilitates facilitates communication between plants. So fungi can relay signals about nutrient availability, the environmental stress in a certain area, pest attacks. They send the signals to the trees, send the signals to each other through this mycelial network underground, which enables the plants to then respond appropriately.
God bless
me. Which suggests for the fungi an intuitive understanding in their role in maintaining the health and balance of the ecosystem.
Yes. Wow.
I could go on and on. I mean, there's another one called fruit body formation, which is that fungi intuitively form fruiting bodies, which is the mushroom cap that you see in response to environmental conditions that favor spore release and germination. So it's a way of like getting...
Procreating.
Correct. So this timing and formation indicates an ability to sense and react to optimal reproductive conditions and fruit at that time.
The mushroom's like, I'm ovulating. Let's do it.
I think that the fungi are the species I really got the least resistance from you from.
Because intuition. I mean, I could get anything you tell me about them. I'm like, I believe it. I believe it fully. Wow. Bravo. Well done. Lots of really good research in there.
Thank you. Fascinating. So, I'm going to ask you a question.
Uh-oh.
Instead of Melissa's famous takeaway, actually for Melissa's famous takeaway, I want you to answer this question. Does intuition exist beyond the human species?
Yes. I think to what extent perhaps is where it gets a little murky for me, but yes, I do believe there is some level. I believe in intuition. I believe in sensing and knowing. So yes, I think there is definitely something to it, whatever method they use to get there.
Yeah. I think that for me, the reason this was so exciting as someone who like writes about and teaches and studies intuition is like, wow, we are all connected through this sense of deep knowing and just sensing beyond what we can logically explain, beyond what is just experience or intelligence.
Yeah.
This sensing, this knowing is such an incredible ability that so many species have, and we know very little about it. Like, I am just excited for us to understand intuition better. Agreed. Across the board, because is it anything short of magic?
No, I would love to hear. In fact, I would love to hear like a scientific basis for the plants that grow better when being spoken to more kindly. I'm just curious.
Okay, we're going to find that plant person and invite them to our show.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I would love that. That would be a full mouth open episode.
Yeah, you would be saying nothing.
I wouldn't feel
like
I'd
have
to
carry that whole episode. Well, Bean, thanks for listening and allowing me to make this episode that I've been wanting to talk about for so long.
It was great. It was really great.
Good.
I was concerned we wouldn't have enough, and now I feel like we didn't have enough time to cover all the bases.
I know. And this is probably going to be one of our longest episodes, but I hope you guys enjoyed it. And if you did, please always remember that sharing this podcast with your friends and family is the best way to support us, or as Bean says, is caring. So please share and give us a like or a, re- or not a like, I always say this, give us a review wherever you're listening to this podcast. That really helps the podcast perform better and get to more ears. And until next week with a new episode, have a great week. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Grushka. Special thanks to our sound editors, Armand Kassam and Anushree Thekadeth. Make sure to join us next week for another episode.